And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. We are live here at Bridgestone Arena, back here for Predators training camp as they get ready for the Arizona Coyotes. Game 1, August 2nd. They will head to Edmonton later this week. Remember, they've got an exhibition game against the Stars on the 30th. Of this month. Darren McFarland, that's me. Willie Donick alongside. Chase McCabe is off this week. And Marquise Munson is back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Willie, what's up? It's been a while.
We're up. We're up high. We're at the familiar place right here, Darren. Section 310, the broadcast position. And haven't been up here in a while, Darren, I got to tell you. So it's great to be checking this stuff out from high atop. We're watching the Black Aces go at it right now, finish things up, their portion of the practice. They've been separated from the group, so when the regulars take the ice a little bit later, it'll be a smaller group, and the group that is probably primed to be the 23 or 25 that are most likely to start the series against the Coyotes here coming up. It's going to be here before we know it.
Santini, Pitlick, and Tolvanen down there on your end. Looks like I got Davies, McCarron.
Ben Harper is out there.
Oh, that's right, Ben Harper. Okay, and who's the – I don't see the number. Who is that?
Alex Carrier.
Carrier.
Is out there.
Okay.
Out there, yeah. I'm trying to think. Rem Pitlick was out there with this group.
Pitlick's over on your side right there.
Yeah, a couple of guys have already gone off. There was a couple others that were there. But it's nobody unexpected. It's who you would expect to be out there. In fact, I guess Tomasino was out there with this group earlier. I did not notice him in the last part of practice. I jumped on there with Ryan. I didn't have a chance to look at every single guy out there.
Rem Pitlick, remember when we used to do weeklies with Trendell for Rem Pitlick, last week was the guy that was putting in the quiet time. Remember Trendell for talking about the quiet time. Rem Pitlick would be the last to leave every day, and he would just do work by himself out here on the ice for a good while, every single day by himself. That's the quiet time that Trent Dilfer used to tell us about. It's the time when athletes work on their craft and getting better that nobody knows about, nobody ever sees.
Well, I think it's clear that a lot of guys that we're watching right now are critical to this team starting next year, and they could be critical.
Could be.
If they play for a while this year. Because we never know, who could be hurt, who could end up being called upon. But, Darren, next year, inevitably, right, there's going to be some turnover, and they're going to need contributions from young players like Pitlick, Tolvanen, obviously Trennan. Guys like that have to fill gaps at small prices. Even if you're fortunate enough to bring back somebody like Mikhail Grandin or Craig Smith, and who knows what's going to happen with those guys, but you have to have young players come in and give you good value for not expensive prices. Like, here's Jonathan Davies, right? Here's another guy that long-term could be an important guy. They would love for him to develop into a reliable third pair guy. And, Alex Carrier would be another guy. Yannick Weber, for example, is in the last year of his contract. That's one to look at. Dan Hamhuis in the last year of his contract. So that third defense pair will be wide open next year. Well, of course, Tenorti and Holzer right now have probably locked in as the guys are going to get the start in this series. That's what it looks like based on the indications at practice.
And that's how they ended. When they hit the pause button, that's who was the third D pairing.
Yep.
At the time. And they seemed to really like kind of the bigger presence of those two guys. And let's be honest. I mean, I know some of the analytic guys would not sit there and brag about their work, but overall, for a third D pairing, it's kind of like your fourth and fifth starters, right, in baseball. You're just looking for a certain thing out of them. You're not looking for a Cy Young performance. You're looking for, you can't hold them to the same standard as the first D pairing. That's why they're third D pairing.
You want nothing bad to happen when they're on the ice. You want them to be able to handle top players for short periods of time. Also, if you watch the simulated virtual series, Darren, they had a great Stanley Cup final against the Flyers. I mean, seriously, it was funny. They had a lot of points. They had multiple point games. Tenorti had a really big goal in one of the games. It was pretty remarkable.
That's what you were talking about earlier.
You never know who the guy is going to be that scores a big goal for you in postseason. It happens all the time. It will happen again.
Indeed, it will. Unfortunately, we've got to, I guess, bring it down a notch to a somber note here on the show. And I just was crushed when I saw the news last night. When it got out there late in the evening, that was probably around, I don't know, 8 o'clock or so. A guy that we worked with, a guy we've known for a long time, Aaron Solomon, who was a TV personality in this market for a very, very long time at WSMV Channel 4. Back in the early days of 102.5 The Game, by the way, next month will be 9 years. Back in the early days, Aaron Solomon worked with us at 102.5 The Game. Had a rising senior for a son, Grant Solomon, who was at, I think it was Grace Christian Academy is where he was playing baseball, really good baseball player, lost his life in a car accident yesterday. And I don't remember if it was yesterday morning. I don't remember the time frame, but we are thinking about Aaron Solomon. We're thinking about the Solomon family. That is just horrible, horrible news. He just celebrated his 18th birthday last month.
You know, I can't even put into words how sad it was to hear that news. You know, we talked about it a lot last night. I mean, as you said, we've known Aaron for a long time. He is a huge presence in the Nashville market, has been for such a long, long time. And Grant, I was at the same baseball complex with Aaron watching our sons play. They're a couple years apart. Of course, I have a rising senior myself in our family, and you know, I mean, you think about that right away. I mean, you can't take anything for granted. You got to hug your kids, and you never know. Just a really, really tragic situation. And Grant was a rising senior, a good program over at Grace Christian. He had played the travel ball. I know how much he loved to play.
I think he was with the Mad Mavericks, who they have a feeder system. We go up against the Mad Mavericks at 8U, so 8U and 9U. So,
yeah, a good kid. And so our thoughts, needless to say, are with the Solomon family and everybody over at Grace Christian. So unbelievable sadness.
I know. It's just – it puts everything in perspective, right? I mean, you think about what we just – how we started the show off yesterday, just talking about the weekend memories. And I'm sure that, you know, everybody had weekend memories, and then to have it all taken away like the very next day, I mean, I can't even imagine what Aaron Solomon and his family is going through and all the people that knew Grant. So just wanted to say we are thinking about them. We are praying for them that they get through this very, very difficult time, and it was just a horrible, horrible thing to hear last night that he had lost his life in a car accident on Monday. So just wanted to pass that along and let them know that we are definitely thinking about them in this very, very tough time. We've got a fun show today. We're going to cover a lot of ground here at Bridgestone Arena as the Predators get oh so close to preparation for game one of the Arizona Coyotes. This is interesting because we're sitting here on Tuesday and baseball is going to try to make their return to play on Thursday, the NBA, and then the NHL. So we're going to have this little window here, Willie, that we've been kind of waiting for months and months and months that, you know, we're going to
Go from 0 to 80.
Or hopefully 0 to 100.
Yeah, let's go 100. Why not?
That would be great if we could do that.
We've got fuel in the tank. Let's go to 100.
I would be more than happy to mash the gas pedal all the way to the floor with live sports. I think everybody is definitely ready for that, and we're going to talk about it today. I know Adam Vingan will join us later on in the show, but we're going to have a conversation about the college football scene with Ian Fitzsimmons. And we come back, and by the way, we need to figure out, is it SpotTrack or SpoTrack?
Good question.
Right?
Good
question. Is that a fair question?
That's the first question.
That'll be the first question out of the gates.
That will be the first question.
You know,
we've got to find this out. I think it's SpotRack, but, you know,
You think it's spot rack?
I think so, but remember our buddy Calvin, who is a big analytics guy.
He is. That's the world he's in.
Who has moved on. He has moved up through the ranks. He got his start with us. He called it Spotrac, and I've been confused ever since.
Spotrac, and you say what?
Spotrac.
Spotrac. Okay. Well, we'll find out.
First thing I see is spot. S-P-O-T.
You know who would know? Our next guest.
Okay.
Because he's the co-founder.
Okay.
Michael Giannetti. So
we're going to go with what he says.
We will find out if it's Spotrac or if it's Spotrac. Those are some of the hard-hitting questions he's going to receive here in a couple of minutes. But honestly, they obviously look at all the contracts and what it means to teams, and we're going to get into all of that and more with him on the other side. Darren Donican, Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Summer camp here at Bridgestone Arena. Summer camp for
summer
the Predators.
Camp. I think you're talking about if you're a baseball fan from the 80s, you remember Rick Camp for the Braves.
That's right.
It was a Chris Berman summer camp.
I had his baseball card. We are live here at Bridgestone Arena as the Predators will hit the ice, the full team here in just shy of a couple of hours in preparation for their qualifying round against the Arizona Coyotes. Game one on August the 2nd. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick alongside. We say hello to Michael Giannetti, who is the co-founder of Let's Find Out, the hard-hitting questions that you will get on this show, because we have had a debate for a good while. How do you pronounce it? Okay, now, Willie, you say what?
I've always just in my mind said, or not in my mind, but I've read it as Spotrac.
But a kid, an intern, a very, very smart kid who's now moved on to analytics for Nashville SC called it Spotrac. And so, Michael.
We've had a debate ever since.
You're the one who would know. Set the record straight. What should we be calling your site?
Yeah, single number one most question I get. It's regrettable 12 years later, of course. It's Spotrac. It's the spot for sports contracts. I smashed it all together 12 years ago.
Ah, okay.
So you've heard that silly question for 12 years.
Of course, yeah. Can't change it now.
Yeah, you're kind of established. You probably shouldn't do that. For all the I don't think we've had you on our show, and we talk about what you guys do all the time. And so thanks for doing this, and hopefully you're not going to be shy to our show, and we can have you on some more. Tell our listeners exactly what you guys are about.
Yeah, we started off just kind of tracking salaries for baseball because that was my passion. We were, you know, talking about that kind of stuff over beers at bars, and there wasn't a spot that really had it all in one place every season. So a couple years later, the NFL CBA gets redone in 2010, and there's a hard cap in the league. And I decided to sit down and read the CBA for a couple of days, imagine that, and turn the site into really a salary cap site. And, you know, we've expanded ever since out to these other sports and continue to do so.
Are you amazed? Because just think about what I said. We had an intern who was getting his master's at Georgia Tech, sharp kid, was early 20s, and now he's doing analytics for a living for the MLS team in Nashville. That kids can actually do that. Remember, I mean, there was a movie made about what the Oakland A's were doing, and now that movie would never be made because everybody's doing it. You would be looked at strange if you weren't doing it in sports.
Of course, my single favorite movie in Moneyball. Yeah, that's where we've come. It's all about the numbers and the math, and you know, a lot of these public-facing websites have kind of helped to grow that entire process because you know we're not just looking at the game as a single sport anymore. There's a business side of it. There's a numbers side of it, of course, and it's all exploded. So you know, I'm happy to see that the kids are doing this as a college major and then taking a career on with it for sure.
When you look at salary cap and salaries and contracts, and maybe I'm asking you to pick your favorite child, and you know you don't do that because every parent's gonna say, well, they're all my favorite child, but which sport is it baseball, like you said? Is that what drew you in? Which sport truly has maybe your closer eye whenever something happens in your world and you're going to examine a little bit closer? Is it baseball that draws you in?
So yeah, it was baseball just because of the preference of sport, but also because it was to be honest, it's the easiest one to track because of there's just not so many bells and whistles that go with it, and you have these gigantic contracts. But of course, now we've got Patrick Mahomes' contract that is essentially a baseball contract. So the complexity of the NFL, the salary cap, the restructuring, all of that process now combined with these massive quarterback contracts, kind of hard to look away from those now.
It is hard to believe that in the NFL, that especially with them having the salary cap that they do and, you know, not guaranteed contracts, but there is becoming more and more, as we see, in the guaranteed money. Rarely do you see the type of contracts that Kansas City did this offseason in a very, very short amount of time. You brought up Mahomes and then over on the defensive side of the ball and Chris Jones. So what do you make of those two contracts? And in the long run, does it come back to bite Kansas City? How much of the shell game are they going to have to play later on to make up for those two big contracts?
Yeah, I mean, when you factor in the kind of season we're about to have too, you know, fingers crossed, with the revenue loss, what the Chiefs have done over the past couple of weeks here is kind of remarkable because of the size of these contracts in the state of revenue that we're in. You know, we've kind of spoken to it a lot. The Mahomes contract is extremely team-friendly. He did it on purpose. He's kind of come public to say that he did this on purpose. It's kind of brilliantly structured so that over the next three seasons, it's cap-friendly for the Chiefs, which allowed them to lock in Chris Jones, which allowed them to keep the rest of that core intact at least for a year or two here. They're in winning mode. Come year four, everybody's getting socked with cash, with big cash payments. I mean, Mahomes is going to get $40 million plus. Chris Jones, I imagine, will be about, you know, 65, 70 million deep 3 years into this thing. I haven't seen the actual details yet, but I kind of know what's coming. So yeah, they're gonna be paying cash. And from a cap standpoint, what the long contract, they kind of let you roll things over. They let you restructure. So I imagine they're gonna be okay for years, but then by year four or five, they're gonna have to rebuild a lot of these pieces just to keep these big players here.
What'd you make of what the Titans did with Derrick Henry?
I thought it was an outstanding gesture, and I know that sounds kind of crude to say, but they absolutely did not have to do this. They could have kept him on that franchise tag, which was a pretty good chunk of change for a running back right now at his age with his mileage. But I was calling all summer for a two-year, $25 million contract. I thought that was exactly what these running backs should be getting at this stage of their career, which is essentially a little bit more than two franchise tags. I'm really happy they did it, because now if Derrick Henry becomes one of those kind of freak running backs who can withstand this kind of power and this tread over the next 2 years, and he's worth the third year, Tennessee has him locked in at a good price. They can handle that third year. The guarantees will be gone. It'll be in their control. I think it's a smart move by Tennessee, but it's certainly not one they had to do.
I want to get your philosophy, your thoughts on what do you think and where this is going. What do you think is the better way to go about it for a player and an agent, and the teams? I don't know. You take it however you want to address it, but we've seen long contracts. I mean, we still talk about Bobby Bonilla Day. Sorry, Willie, he's a Mets fan, but, I mean, that just came up, and, you know, that paycheck he gets on that day every year. And in the NHL, as we sit here at Bridgestone Arena around the Predators, the old CBA, you know, they were, and it happened to the Predators where – you could see these teams came in and signed these guys to 10, 11-year deals, and now the new CBA, you cannot do that. But what do you make of what is the right way to go about contracts, in your opinion? Is it the long, long deals or the much shorter deals? How would you answer that?
So I'll start with the team. The team wants the longest deal possible. That's why we had the argument with Dak Prescott and the Cowboys about 5 years versus four or three. You always want to have as much term as possible on these contracts because term equals control, especially in non-guaranteed leagues. You know, any kind of term you have on that contract belongs to the team. So that's the easy answer there. I'm completely the opposite for players and agents at this point. Now, maybe not so much agents. You know, they're still looking for their bottom line. But in non-guaranteed leagues, agents are getting smarter and smarter with trimming the fat off the backside of these contracts. The NBA has completely done it. LeBron James and that crew have completely trimmed long-term deals out of the league. It's one and done. It's maybe there's a player option in year two. That's where that league has gone because players want complete control of not only their finances but their destiny, where they want to be. We haven't seen that certainly with the NFL quite yet, but it's coming down. These free agent contracts that used to be 5 years, 6 years all the time are now 3 and 4. Because, like I said, agents are trying to trim the fat off the back end because these players want to control where they are in 3 years. Teams are operating in four-year windows. I mean, after 3 years, the coach could be gone, the GM could be gone, the quarterback could be gone, and everything starts over. So you don't want to be locked into a deal where the entire team might blow up around you.
We're talking to Michael Geniti of SpotTrack as we talk contracts here. And Michael, I'm looking at the Titans page on your website right now, and I'm still trying to train myself on the best way to interpret sometimes how well a team is doing with their salary cap space, etc. Maybe you can help us, and for our listeners that like to go on your site, it's the trickiest one in my mind to try to interpret sometimes because all the different things that teams do to stay under the cap and keep some flexibility, and of course you have the ability to drop players at points during the contract. So what is the single most important thing to look at when you're trying to evaluate how a team's doing under the cap?
Yeah, probably three places to look. So there's we kind of break out the totals for every team at the bottom and in the sidebar of every page on the site. The one to look at right now is the top 51 cap space. Throughout the entire offseason, only the top 51 salary cap hits count towards the team's cap. So you can carry, a 90-man roster with a bunch of minimum salaries, but those guys generally don't count towards your cap. That's why the drafted players really don't have too much impact on the salary cap across the summer until they actually make the roster. That falls off when week one starts, and all 53-plus practice squatters and everything count. So there's a flip of a switch on our site when the season starts versus the off-season top 51. And then the other one to look at is dead cap. Dead cap's a very, very strong representation of where your team currently is in that contention window I was talking about. Generally speaking, if you're high in dead cap, if you're in the top 10 or certainly the top 5 of dead cap across the league, something has gone terribly wrong. And you have started a rebuild, you have released high-profile players, things like that have forced the issue. And generally speaking, those teams do not contend. Now, we do have a situation this year where the Rams cut and traded away two of their big players, and they have a significant amount of dead cap. So I'm looking at that team in 2020 to kind of buck that trend because, quite frankly, to finish off here, teams have a lot of cap space. We're in a situation where they've been rolling over cap for years and years and years, and there's kind of more cap than cash that needs to be handed out right now. To me, it's a growing problem in this league, and we'll see what happens in the next few.
Do you think, Michael, it's fair to say, we have Floyd Reese that works for our show, and I remember when he was running the Titans, and it was a relatively early age of the salary cap, there were a lot more teams that did it like the Titans did, where you maxed out the credit card and then you blew it all up when it dropped. Do you think teams have gotten much better at not getting to that point where you're in, quote, salary cap jail?
Not even a question. There were some teams who were so bad at this, and I won't name them, just to start those 2010 to 2015 years. Really bad, like just move after move, just put them, sunk them lower and lower into the mess. Everybody's gotten way better at this. We're seeing some of the younger GMs come in who have the analytics background, who understand how to kind of flex this thing a little bit. But listen, at the same time, we've got a couple of teams in this league, Patriots being one of them, I'll call their name out, who purposely run up against that cap, who purposely dwindle their cap space in May and June at that, the peak of free agency there, so that they can leverage a lack of cap space to keep their contracts low. So there is a bit of gamesmanship with how this cap system is structured. And if you can play your cards right, you can max it out when you need to and then always find space when you need to as well.
Interesting. So all of these things being said, we got your take on the Derrick Henry contract. We always know how you budget your quarterback position is essential. So what did you think of the strategy on signing Ryan Tannehill?
I thought it was too early. I thought it was too early in the summer to make, or really the spring, to make that move. And I thought they guaranteed him a little bit too much money up front. I think $91 million guaranteed after certainly a great year, but it was just the 1 year, is a little bit scary. It's risky. It's a lot over the next 3 years to have to essentially write down in pen at this point. I wasn't sure who they were bidding against. We had so many quarterbacks, either via the draft or via free agency, available this offseason, more than I think we've ever had, that I'm not sure who they were bidding against in the Ryan Tannehill contract, and it feels like they went over the top on that number, especially the guaranteed number. So while I like the player and I'm glad they kept things intact, I wonder if they jumped the gun a little bit on those numbers.
Michael, I don't know how much you follow hockey, but I think we're all curious. Now that the CBA has been extended and we know that you're going into an era here, especially for the next year at least, where you're going to have revenues compromised in a sport that, really feeds off of the gate. They don't have the massive TV money that the NFL does. What that's going to do to teams in the salary cap for the NHL?
Yeah, I think really all these leagues, and certainly the NHL is one of them, it's about maintaining right now. I mean, I know we're hearing numbers in the NFL about like a $70 million cap dump next year. I think that's really just a headline at this point. I really think these leagues have to do everything possible to maintain their cap situation, and maybe just a slight dip if they have to, and spread this thing out over the next 4 to 5 seasons and take the losses a little bit at a time. Because a major salary drop in any of these leagues, certainly the NHL because of the revenue points that you just made, would be so damaging to the current structures of these teams and all the work that these GMs have put in just to get themselves safe and comfortable with where they are. I thought it was a very good move for the NHL just to push through the CBA, lock it in, get some security for the next 4 to 5 seasons and not change too much, because you're right. They're sort of the last place sport right now in this country, and any kind of mess, any kind of social media mess like baseball just went through is just so bad for the game from an optics perspective. I think getting down to business, getting back on the ice is the most important factor, and I hope they can maintain that cap structure for the next couple of seasons.
Michael, last thing, because of the pandemic, because of what you were just talking about, and we don't know what it's going to look like on the other side. That's why I was saying on this show, if Derrick Henry wasn't insulted by the Titans, that if there was a deal that he could live with, he should take now, because nobody has a clue what next offseason is going to look like. I mean, already there's a ton of NFL teams that are coming out and saying, yeah, we're probably not going to have fans in the stands. Well, guess what? That is going to affect their bottom dollar. They're going to go into next offseason realizing they didn't make anywhere near the money that they made a year ago, right? So I wonder, so the question I have is, everybody's going to be affected by this, everybody, and they already have been, but they're going to continue to be affected by it. The NHL added Las Vegas, okay? So Vegas came in and paid a hefty price to join the league, and then Seattle is coming just around the corner, and they paid even more. So in other words, a whole lot of dough went in all these owners' pockets without doing anything. Do you think because of that, and with that being said, do you think that's really going to push baseball, who wants to expand, and you've got two franchises that they're trying to figure out what the heck to do with because they don't have the facilities in Oakland and Tampa? There's a lot of talk about this market being an MLB market down the road, a lot of talk, and it just continues to grow. Do you think baseball will look at the NHL model and say, look, we need to make up revenue, so now is the time to strike on, you know, adding teams or adding franchises and making them pay $750, $1 billion, whatever the price tag is?
If I could place a bet on it, I'd do it.
So would I.
Is absolutely true. I mean, I'd place a bet on Nashville, too. I think that's exactly where baseball needs to be right now. It's proven that it can be a multi-sport town. Look, the one thing I'm taking away from a lot of these sports, and the NFL is kind of immune to this, unfortunately, but or good for them, but nobody needs fans more than baseball. Nobody. I mean, the gate matters so much to baseball because they are losing national TV contracts. They're not gaining them like these other leagues are to some degree. So the fans are so important to this league that I think there's going to be a ton of changes with how the gate works with Major League Baseball going forward. And, of course, you know, more seats, more stadiums, more teams available is only going to help that. And you're right. It helped the NHL so instantly. Everybody took notice of that. Everybody took notice of how quickly the Vegas Golden Knights kind of reemerged the NHL in terms of a little bit of a revenue boost, but interest as well. And that's what baseball is lacking right now, unfortunately. So I do think they're going to follow suit. It's not going to be instantaneously, but they're going to have to make a move in a couple of years here.
I feel the same way. Hey, thanks for the visit. Really appreciate you doing this, and hopefully we can talk to you down the road.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right, Michael Jannetti, co-founder, editor of SpotTrac, and that's how you follow them, at SpotTrac on Twitter, and it's your source for all the teams and their player contracts, their salaries, the salary cap management, payrolls, et cetera, et cetera. It's a good follow. Check out their work. We use a lot of the info they put out there all the time on this show. We will come back. More on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Ooh, little Hall & Oates bringing us back.
I was just listening, you know, the 80s channel and the satellite, they do a countdown each weekend of the exact top 40 from this week and whatever year in the 80s. And this was in the top five, 1981. Like, so summer of 81, right around like July of 81, you would have heard this at the top of the charts. So I always think, like, where was I in that summer? So I was 10, and what were we doing in the summer? You know, it gets you going that way. But
our world, when it comes to this show, is sports, but this show loves music, loves concerts. What are they doing to make up right now? What is that world doing to make up? Yeah. Because they're not going to be having concerts anytime soon.
Yep.
So what are they doing?
Well, they're getting dates. They're pushing dates back. In fact, you know our buddy David Kells, who works right here. Yep. We're sitting at Bridgestone Arena. I watched Hall & Oates perform that song.
Yep.
Right there on the, you know, down to our right, as we see Rem Pitlick, the last guy off the ice here for the Predators in the first group. He once again did the extra work
quiet
after
time.
Practice in the quiet time. He was the only guy out there. I've talked to David a few times about it. He just said, hey, they're not canceling these concerts. Eventually, everybody that had a date booked here is going to play here. It's just –
But I'm saying they're all pushed to 2021.
Yeah, they're going to be moved back. Yeah, that's the reality, and that's everybody. So,
but, I mean, are they coming – like the sports said, okay, we've got to come up with another way, right? So now we've got a bubble in Orlando for the NBA and the MLS. Now – The NHL, we got to figure out how to come back. So let's have hub cities. We've got one in Edmonton and Toronto. But what is the music industry? What are they doing? How are they able to, you know, for the established groups that have made their money, I mean, they'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's just a break for them. But what about all the other musicians and bands that are trying to make
it's
it?
Tough.
Like, how do they do this?
It's tough for them, for sure.
Like, what's their alternative?
I know for the venues, they're trying to get creative and, you know, have – people come in and perform at a venue virtually with the cameras and things like that. But
does that bring in revenue?
Well, I guess if you did it right and you put it on a virtual or you televise it or something, you can – because I think there's going to be some made-for-TV events that take place here in the country music. I think I saw
I know there's
one.
Been some drive-in stuff, but how does that work? Is that just go to the drive-in? Is that how much goes to the entertainer? Like,
yeah.
I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I think they're doing just like sports. They're trying to get creative. The movies, right? It's hard to go. Can't go to the movies in most places right now. I saw where, and I think this is the right move as much as I know a lot of people won't like it, but I think I saw where the mayor has said on Friday at 10 a.m. can't serve alcohol in Davidson County. Starting this Friday. Got to keep the numbers down. That's people congregate. They get together at the bars. It's inevitable. You're gonna have contact there, so it's gonna minimize some contact. We've got to do it. We got to get these numbers down. But yeah, it's tough. Now the piece of good news I heard yesterday, Darren. Not that I am Mr. Science or anything, but I did see on the news that people are very encouraged about a vaccine worldwide. That they're ahead of the
really
that they you know they're moving forward with the steps. I don't have all the details, but and so I mean just keep your fingers crossed. That would be. So big.
They're ahead, but I mean, what does that mean? Because the earliest they've ever come up with a vaccine is 4 years. So, I mean,
listen,
let's hope that they're ahead of that.
I was not watching some remote, you know, this was CBS or NBC.
Yeah.
I was flipping around. I think they both had the story.
Did they throw anything out there, like possibly when?
Oh, yeah. They were saying that they are very encouraged, and they were saying in the fall.
Really?
As early as the fall. Now, that's the people
how
doing
it. How they
going
to mass produce
we
it
still
got
to wait.
Out.
Well, we still got a long way to go,
yeah.
Right? We still got to get there. But, you know, all of the results have been good so far. So, I mean, that we just got to think positive there. Jeez. And I don't know anything about it. I'm just watching what they're saying off the TV. But that would be such a godsend for everything, obviously, because then you can start – you know, treating people, and it's a little, you feel a little bit better about opening things up and knowing who's at risk, all of that stuff. So
I did see, we talked about this yesterday, where California, I guess they're going to push their fall sports to spring. Is that right? Is that what we said yesterday? Where today I saw where your state, Florida, they're saying, hey, we're going. we're going. Fall sports is on.
Florida, well, there's so much going on down there, right? You know that, like I was watching the MLS, they're playing the tournament in Orlando. There was a game on this morning.
Yep.
Yes, they want to play, and at the same time, the teachers union is saying, hey, wait a minute. We're just going to go ahead and have school, and nobody's saying anything. Like, that's part of it, right? They're saying, we're going to school, and we're going to play. And the teacher's like, wait. We got to – so they're suing whatever you – whoever you sue to try to contend with that. Hmm. So I don't know. The whole question of school is a huge question that is coming to a head, just like college football, college sports. Got to decide.
Well, it was interesting.
For better or worse, we got to make a decision of what we're going to do.
Marquise, I heard I'm putting you on the spot here. I heard you and Ryan Porth play a clip from, I think it was Luke Fickell, when I was on the way down.
He read a quote from Luke, and I can send you that. But we played an audio clip from there's going to be a Real Sports episode tonight on HBO with Greg Sankey. And it got sounded a little spicy. So
do you have what Luke Fickell said? I thought you guys played a clip, so it was just him reading what Luke Fickell said?
Yeah, we played the clip on Greg Sankey.
Okay.
Let me pull up the clip from Luke Fickell because it was ridiculous.
Well, I want us to talk. Actually, that's it was interesting because I want us to talk about it on the other side. I wanted to put it out there and then – because it was a lot. It was interesting. I don't know if any has there been anybody else kind of come out publicly and say that. That's what kind of piqued my interest. I can't think of another coach that's come out and framed it that way.
No, because today Mack Brown actually talked to the media on a Zoom call, and he had the complete opposite approach of
what
Luke Fickell has said. Of basically, he's keeping his players within a bubble, and he's making them wear a mask when they lift, and all these different protocols that they're taking, and they've tested players for 3 weeks straight, and none of them has tested positive. So obviously a different mindset, and it's going to be different strokes for different coaches pretty much.
And different states have had a varying degree of success at keeping the caseload down. Some have done way better than others, right? And in the Southeast, they haven't done as well in general as in the Big Ten country. I mean, that's a fact. That's just so. I think you would have maybe a different mindset if you're in Ohio as opposed to in Alabama. I think Alabama just put their governor put in a mask mandate. They were the latest state to do it, I think, or one of the latest.
Yeah, they did. And they started this week.
Man, I spent a lot of time down there last week. It's smart. You know, they had a lot of people wearing masks, but there could be more. I think, like we said yesterday, the mandate, the net result is just simple. More people are going to wear the mask. If they know they have to, there's going to be some percentage of people that to say, well, okay, I'll do it. There'll be always some that resist and always some people that, even if you didn't have a mandate, will wear them. But you'll just have more people wearing them. And that's a good thing.
Rutherford County is going to mask
mandate
on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Starting Wednesday.
I mean, I don't know what we're waiting on, honestly, as a state. Just do it. And if people want to be, dissidents or, rebels, whatever you want to,
Then just don't go in places.
Fine.
Don't grocery shop. Don't go in Target.
Just make the
mandate.
Don't go
in Walmart.
Just make it.
Right.
It's not a big deal. Just say do it. Let's get more people to do it.
All right. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour with Luke Fickell's comments, the University of Cincinnati football coach, and discuss. We'll do that on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Little Van Halen bringing us back here. We're live at Bridgestone Arena. Predators have a practice in about an hour. Team will hit the ice. Talk about Luke Fickell, Cincinnati's football coach. When asked about, what are your thoughts on playing in the spring? He said, don't have any. I'm not even going to talk about it. You won't even, then the person interviewing him says, you won't even entertain it? He said, nope, because that means you're not talking about the fall. And I don't talk to people who are pessimistic and thinking that we can't do this in the fall. So call me if something else happens, and maybe I'll talk to you about it. But no, we're playing in the fall. We have to learn and find a way to make it work, and I think we will, because it's not going away. When we play this year, the virus is still going to be there, and at some point in time, you have to dance with it, go toe-to-toe with the virus, some way, somehow. Now, that doesn't mean be stupid. Doesn't mean you say the hell with it and go to every bar and pool party. No, but you're going to have to realize that there is no such thing as a bubble unless you stay quarantined in your own house. The NBA might have the closest thing to a bubble, but there still is risk involved. I know a lot of people, Willie, will probably have a problem with that, probably just because he's a Division I head football coach in saying that. But really, if you listen to him, I can understand where there's some things that could maybe make you cringe, but that I understand what he's saying. Like, I think what he's saying, there's a whole lot of truth to it. I mean, really, it's stuff we've been sitting here talking about on the show. I don't really have a problem with it at all.
I think it's life. Listen, what did we talk about yesterday at the beginning of the show? Both of our kids have been playing baseball all summer. Not all summer, but for the last month and a half. And so
since
we've
June.
Been, to say the quote, dancing with it, we're dancing with it a little bit. I think everybody in their own world is having to do that on whatever level they're comfortable, right? I think if everybody were dancing with it smart, like he makes a lot of sense. You know, he says, don't be stupid about it. Don't go to the bar. Don't go to the party. And then if you follow up, wearing the mask and being very conscious of distancing and keeping your hands washed, if everybody would just do those things, we'd be a lot closer to being able to say, yeah, we can do this. Now, football is, to me, just a little different than baseball and some other sports in terms of the interaction. Because
is it different than basketball and hockey?
Well, hockey is they're in the atmosphere where they have really limited, as they dance with it, right? They've taken extreme measures. They're going to a place where the caseload is low. They're testing everybody. And then once they put everybody in that environment, they're staying in that environment. Football can't do that, right? And then you add on top of that in a school situation for high school or college that you're interacting with other students. So it makes it much more complicated. But college basketball, there's no question. There hasn't been much talk about it, but college basketball is in big jeopardy too. Just inevitably. But I agree with that philosophy of Luke Fickell for sure, saying we have to learn to dance with it. The problem is the outside circumstances have made it really tough because the cases have gone up so high.
Well, I think, Wes, we've been talking about the last couple of days. What started to happen should have been happening. And, I mean, you just have to have, as we've been talking about, you can't strongly suggest anymore. Like, strongly suggesting hasn't worked.
Now, so, here's a question, right?
We have to try something else.
If you said to all these players, hey, there's a risk. You know, let's be honest. The caseload is up. We got issues. Here's what our college is doing. Here's what we're doing for the students. We're going to try to protect you as best we can. We're going to take all these measures. Luke Fickell is talking about. Jim Harbaugh said a lot of the same stuff.
Yep.
Would you still like to play? If you left it up to the students and for the athletes, would they choose to play?
I think they would.
And would the parents, you know, barring major health risk underlying, you know, diabetes, whatever specific thing you might have, would they choose to let their sons play? I think they would. Would I be willing to let my daughter play if she wanted to play? And they said the fall season has been pushed back, but it's on, TSSAA.
You would play.
I think we would play.
Well, I don't know why you wouldn't. The reason I said that before you answered it is this is what I keep coming back to, and this is what we've talked about in our house. Where is the line? Like, how can you think it's okay for Mahoney to play baseball, but it can't be okay for Evie to play soccer?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's the lines are, like, you can't, if one is okay, then to me, the other is, I mean, I don't know. It's like the whole school talk that we've talked about. I mean, how can I get on here and say, and oh, by the way, my situation's even a little bit different. We're in dugouts, okay? There's no, you know, there's no social distancing when we're in the dugout. Now, luckily, when we're in the dugout, you know, they're out on the field, so that does provide that. But when they're hitting, luckily I'm not in there, but there are a couple of coaches that have to be in there with them. They're all in the dugout together. I'm out on the field. But I guess what I'm getting at is so he can be with his team. We're all together. We're practicing. We're playing these tournaments, 18-team tournaments, 19-team tournaments, these big tournaments like you just were in, and spending all weekend together. And then, but yet, but we're going to say, okay, but our line in the sand is no school. Like, he can be with his baseball team, but he can't be in class. Like, I want everything to be safe as possible, but I don't know how you say one is okay and one is not when they're both the same. I mean, they just are. Although you could say one is outdoors and one is indoors. So maybe that's the counter to it. I don't know.
I see what baseball is going through, Major League Baseball, and they have their system that's unfolding, right? They have plenty of people. If you look at Major League Baseball, it's full of guys that I don't know what the number is, but they've had plenty of positive tests. Those people go into an area. They don't come back for a while. The next guy comes in and plays.
Well, while is what, 10 days?
Yeah. I think the complicated thing you get into is the kids, for the most part, right? I know you see reports there are some kids that have reacted poorly to the virus. It has happened. It's very, very,
very low.
More often, I mean, a huge, huge 99. Yeah, I don't know what the percentage is. I don't want to put a percentage. But the risk is extremely low for kids. The problem is if they come back with it to your household, who's in that household? Are grandma and grandpa in your household?
Yeah.
Do your parents have issues health-wise? Mm-hmm. Are they at risk? That's where you get into. And this has not changed since day one. Remember March the 12th or 13th, we had your doctor friend on.
Mm-hmm.
He laid that out perfectly. He said all of that on the first day. We've known this since March.
Yep.
Right? The issue is not, the people that get it and feel fine or might be sick for a few days and fine. It's how much are we looking out for the vulnerable people? Because that vulnerable, we've already paid a heavy price, and we will continue to pay that price if we continue to move forward with schools and everything. So how important is it to maintain economic sanity and, keeping that going? And how important is it to have the kids in the environment where they're growing and getting their education and doing their activities? What price are we willing to pay for that? And it would help if everybody understood that and took all of the measures that you can take, that you have control over with the mask, et cetera. That's why I don't understand why so many people are resistant to that part of it. If you want to have the nice things, you want to be able to keep to dance with it, dance with it correctly. Don't go to the bars. But people can't resist, right? They're having these parties. They're having the street party. But,
I just have to believe that the resist is they just don't believe. They don't believe.
They don't believe.
They don't believe or they don't care. I mean, how else do you come to that, right? I mean, I can't imagine that you are on board with what's going on, but yet you're going to the things that you just laid out. I just have to believe because there are a lot of people that just don't believe. They just don't. And, that's just what it is. You, me, and thousands or millions of others cannot convince them otherwise. And, I don't know what to say to that, but I know because I've seen that said, right? And if you are doing stuff like that, probably more times than not, you just either you're okay, like you're like, it's not going to happen to me, or whatever, I don't even believe this anyway. That's probably the mentality. Or in the case of the younger people, as I've said before on the show, in my dealings, the younger folks, they just believe they're invincible and they don't care. We've seen that, right?
No question.
They may believe it, they're just like, it's not going to happen to me.
That's the biggest thing that's happening right now.
Yeah, right.
And who are they passing it along to?
I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm full of energy, nothing can touch me.
And that may be true, but who are they passing it along to?
Right. All right, we'll come back. Hour number two on the other side. We'll talk to Adam Vingan, some hockey with him at high noon. We'll talk to the new Braves reporter as MLB gets close to coming back. That's coming up in the final hour of the program, and we'll talk about 2 days from now. Major League Baseball will have their return to play. A lot more coming on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.